The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, pay attention. This is your boy, the coach from the WWE. I would like to welcome you to the very first wrestling podcast in the world. To take you on a weekly deep dive in the classic matches, along with legends of the squared circle. Enjoy the discussion. Enjoy the back and forth. There's so much to get into. Ladies and gentlemen, this is The Payoff.
Jeff, we're covering an Action Zone match. But not just any WWF Action Zone match. We're covering the Click Tag Team match, as it's often referred to. This is going to be a fun one. I am really looking forward to this. And I'm looking at our next couple episodes, and there's a lot of good ones, but I think this is the one I'm most excited to talk about and watch. But first, how the hell are you doing?
This is exciting. We're coming off of me ranting raving over Goldberg. We got a little bit of, I say, some downtime here. It's kind of weird. We've almost got 3 weeks before, like, we really get a show, like a big show, you know, with, Crown Jewel isn't for, you know, another like week or 2.5 weeks, like, you know, pay-per-views, it's going to be a while before we get anything there. Like, it's just kind of, I say it's a quiet time right now. It's really weird what we're going through. You know, Survivor Series is weeks, you know, over a month away, but it just, you know, it's a weird time to be a wrestling fan, but you know what? Like, we're going to keep plugging along on the show and bring everybody some good matches here. October is an exciting month. We got some good stuff.
Well, this is a really kind of underground, famous, off the radar, but definitely discussed match, because it was an awesome, awesome tag team match from what I read, but then also what I remember, because I, not that long ago, I went back and watched this match, and maybe a couple years ago before we were doing the podcast, and I was like, holy shit, was this a good match? So I'm pumped to cover it. That's really why we're covering it. Why are you excited about this one, Jeff?
Same thing. And, you know, like you said, we've been trying to really sprinkle in some stuff here that we haven't done, and we've never done an Action Zone. Granted, there wasn't a ton of great stuff on Action Zone, but to have a match like this that will prove from the card, it wasn't always stacked. But this match was definitely stacked. And I think it's just kind of cool to cover some grounds that we haven't in a while. We sprinkled in some Ring of Honor here. We're going to try and sprinkle in some Ring of Honor here, some New Japan. So, you know, go back and show. So, I think just some new stuff. Like, it proves that with a list of 300 episodes still that we could potentially do, Payoff's not going anywhere, man. We got a lot to do.
Agreed. And, man, it's just amazing how many matches are still out there for us to discuss. You're so right. So, with that, Jeff, are you ready?
Let's do this, man.
Let's get into the build.
Oh, it's time for the build.
So we're at the world famous Westchester County Civic Center in White Plains, New York, with a capacity of 5,000 people, because that's the buildings they were running in this stage. And some much smaller. I mean, some of these Action Zone tapings were what felt like high school gyms, but I think in some cases might've been. So really interesting just to see how far the business has evolved. We're now at Arthur Ashe Stadium and we're at Cowboys Stadium, and it's just wild. This show, aside from the match we're going to cover, had Bob Backlund against Russ Greenberg. Jeff, refresh my memory. Did Russ Greenberg ever have a world title run?
I don't believe so. It may, maybe in developmental, but I'll have to look that one up. I'll do my research on that.
See what you can find about Russ Greenberg.
We're going to look this up.
Doink, who is accompanied by Dink, Wink, and Pink, wrestled Tony DeVito. We had an IRS promo at a graveyard because he was feuding with The Undertaker. King Kong Bundy wrestled against Aaron Ferguson, who is criminally underrated. I'm just kidding. No idea who he is.
Just and, like Ross Greenberg. Yeah.
Yeah. Russ Greenberg.
Yeah. Sorry.
That's okay. Ross Greenberg actually worked Portland for a few years. You remember him?
I don't.
No, I'm just making that up.
I was going to say
Lex Luger against the Executioner. So whew, good thing this tag match was good, but probably nobody was watching because these shows sucked. I'm just such a mark. I used to watch this. I watched Live Wire, any of the weekend programming, because really all we had was an hour of Raw during the week and, you know, quarterly pay-per-views. And yeah, so these, what seemed like throwaway Saturday and Sunday shows, superstars, some of the other ones over the years as a kid, you know, you had an hour of Raw. And then this was the other stuff you had. So I found myself taping these. Yes. VHS taping them every week and watching them when I could. So storyline standpoint, obviously not a massive build to this particular match, but there's a lot of moving pieces with these four guys. So how do we get the HBK and Diesel against Razor and the 1-2-3 Kid?
I don't want to leave our fans hanging here, but we did have Russ Greenberg, from what I can see, never won a match in his career, had roughly 40 matches.
Wow.
And it looks like his biggest match, it was actually a shotgun Saturday night in 1999. He was in a tag match with Julio Sanchez, and they took on, if you can believe it, the Hardy Bros or Hardy Boys.
This guy had a hell of a run. That's like 5 years after this match.
1999. Yeah. And so just crazy. So who were introduced as the Fraternal Flyers on their way to the ring, the Hardy Boys were. But anyways, so yeah. So let's do a little recap here. Action Zone. Kind of what was the deal here? So it started October 23rd, 1994 and lasted until September 15th, 1996. The main event, the first evening, the debut show, it had Bret Hart beating Owen Hart to win the, to retain the WWF championship. This match, this tag match and this card that Tom just went over was actually the second week ever of Action Zone. So a little bit of, again, a history with the show itself. You actually had Vince and Todd Pettengill calling the first three episodes. And then after that, you had JR taking over for McMahon and then Gorilla Monsoon filling in for JR occasionally. And so by the end of it, though, it was really just a highlight show that, like you said, was Sunday mornings with both like Monday Night Raw and Superstars. And so that was Pettengill and Doc Hendricks hosting that one. And so eventually though, it was, like we said, canceled in 1996 and replaced by WWF Superstars. And so, which we'll get into that one a different day, but we had that. So we got the click, we got all these guys in here. So at this point, Razor had been feuding with Shawn and Diesel, really. You had coming off of the ladder match at WrestleMania 10 and Razor becoming undisputed Intercontinental Champion. A lot of different names here. They're all X-Pac, 1-2-3 Kid, whatever you want to call them. But Lightning Kid, Sean Waltman, had his WWF tryout. Tom, you're one of your favorite places, of course, in Phoenix, Arizona. It was actually the day after WrestleMania 11. Nine, WrestleMania nine. And it was against another up and comer at the time, Louis Spicoli. And so he had got his contract offer. He actually made, so he was Lightning Kid. And then he made his TV debut as the Kamikaze Kid on Monday Night Raw. That was May 3rd. He had lost to Doink the Clown. So not too long after that, he becomes the Cannonball Kid and then just the Kid. And so where did the 1-2-3 get added onto this? It was actually an upset pin against Razor Ramon. It was a May 17th episode of Monday Night Raw where he became the 1-2-3 kid. So I had no clue. Like, you know, way to put your stars over by renaming him every week. God, it's like Vince dropping names over here. Like, so with that though, because of that kind of upset over Razor actually challenged him to a rematch. It was increasing actual like money. It was $2,500, $5,000, and then eventually $10,000 of his own money to have a feud, or, you know, to continue their feud and have a rematch. And so, Teddy Biasi was involved in this one as well too, because he had been feuding with Razor. He had actually been making fun of Razor at this point. 1-2-3 kid actually grabbed the money, accepted the challenge, grabbed the money and ran away, which led to DiBiase kind of making fun of Razor. So that was a kind of play on what was happening as well too, which because of that feud, you know, like DiBiase was saying that Razor had lost to a nobody and, you know, that, you know, someone that, you know, couldn't make it. Well, 1-2-3 started feuding, or really not necessarily feuding, but had a match with DiBiase, beat the Million Dollar Man. And so getting all these like crazy wins and things like that. And so you've got these guys kind of at each other, you know, heel and face, but then Razor actually kind of turned face, became one of the good guys, and they were working together. And so, and really, you know, kind of mentoring him, kind of showing in the ropes, as you know, how they were playing it up. And so, 1-2-3 kid though, actually making his pay-per-view debut at SummerSlam. He actually lost to the Million Dollar Man in IRS DiBiase lost to Razor, but 1-2-3 kid lost to IRS. And so a little bit of back and forth with these guys. Like I said, Sean and you know, Diesel and stuff like that. We'll get into their feud. Hadn't really kicked off at this point yet. We'll talk about it in the aftermath, but just really a quick little build on this one, but it made, you know, a lot of sense as well too. And so between getting the debut, like this happening, you know, in October of 1994, but then you have really like 1-2-3 kid, you know, whatever you want to call him, Kamikaze Lightning, debuting, you know, right after that WrestleMania. So really just kind of interesting, you know, like, you know, I say you know, slow build for him, but also like what, I don't know if it really was, we'll talk about it after, but like, you know, he got some big wins right out of the gate. So there's something to say for that. So that's how we end up with this match, is just everybody kind of feuding, a lot of it circling around Razor though, and kind of what, the feud he had with Sean, but then, you know, because he's working with 1-2-3, we get this match.
Well, you can find this, on Daily Motion, Action Zone 94, Shawn Michaels and Diesel versus 1-2-3 Kid and Razor Ramon 10.30. So that's the title of the video we're watching. And we'll post the link on social as well. But Jeff, you ready for this one?
Yeah, like I said, you've seen it in the last few years. I have not, other than kind of reading it. So I'm ready to watch this one.
Good. Well, let's get right into the payoff.
Oh, it's time for the payoff.
All right, here we go, man. Bad guy, 1-2-3 kid, coming down to the ring in Westchester, or White Plains, Westchester County Civic Center.
Yep. I was looking at it. There is some pictures inside the venue, quite small, as we would expect.
I can imagine. So, you know, recently, believe it or not, I don't know if you've seen this yet, Bryan Danielson had his first 5-star match. Did you know that?
His first one.
That's really? That. So Meltzer gave him and Omega 5 stars, and that's it's the first 5-star match of Danielson's career. And then, I think it's like the 19th or some crazy number for Omega. Did you think it was a 5-star match?
I think it was easily the best opening TV match ever.
Well, that, yes.
No, I think there's no doubt about that.
And by the way, on this tag match, really fast start. I mean, they haven't even, how often do you see all four guys just going at it on like a TV tag match? Usually, you know, you start off like a traditional thing, but man,
it's hot, right out of the gate. Oh my gosh. Hot, he's got him up.
Start. Razor. Oh,
whoa, we got it.
Razor just hit the Razor's edge.
Oh, but right. Oh, right on the
side. Drag Sean out of the ring. Holy hell. What a start to this match.
Oof. Yeah. I got to recover. Yikes. Okay. Do I think it was a 5-star match? Yeah, I do. I actually was texting someone like, and so, cause I knew you weren't watching when it happened. So I had to find somebody else to text about it. And so, and I texted them, I said, this is like, they're not going to do a time limit draw. And sure shit, it got to about 20 minutes. And I was like, they're going to do a time limit draw. Like that, we are absolutely going to see it. And like, I know we see that a lot more in New Japan. I actually wish, I think it is a good way of telling a story versus like some of the other stuff like we've seen, you know, with the, you know, the bullshit, you know, interference and stuff like that. Like, no, did I want it to go to a time limit draw? No, but it made sense. And you know, we're getting it again. Like,
well, think about this, you know, how many, okay, the wrestling business, you know, this, wow. What a start to this match, by the way.
There's some high flying from the kid. Yeah. The crossbody kind of so, twisting onto Michaels. Yep.
So pro wrestling is fixed. Okay. And you only
excuse me.
I know. I'm sorry.
Pull the curtain back, buddy. Jesus. Spoilers.
We'll edit this out. We'll bleep it. So you only have so many storytelling devices and you know, you can do a bullshit finish. You could, you know, like cheating, you could do a DQ finish, but to me, what better device do you have to continue this story than a 30-minute time limit draw? I thought it was perfect.
Yeah.
I thought it made all the sense in the world. It makes perfect sense. Hey, if Danielson wins, okay, oh, I guess.
Yeah, 1, 2, 3, way up. Jesus, diesel him. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Is this Kevin Nash or is it Glenn Jacobs?
Yeah, we'll have to research that one. I'm pretty sure that's Kevin Nash.
So. You know, this Daily Motion feed is not the, this is not high definition television.
I just
thought it was like the perfect storyline. It's like it's just what they do makes so much sense. Do they even do DQ finishes in AEW?
Yeah, they do occasionally.
But just occasionally. But yeah, I mean, it just makes so much more sense. I thought it was perfect. I mean, what a match. The only, if I had to critique anything, I didn't think, and maybe I just missed it because I was working out while I was watching the match, but I didn't think they played up that it was a 30-minute time limit enough until the very end. And then there was no countdown. There was no, I just felt like they kind of mentioned it. When they did, it was like, oh, clearly there's 45 seconds left. We're getting
it. It was very hard to hear.
Okay.
So that was the problem. And it's like New Japan, it's very clear. Part of that's because the crowd isn't as like hype or anything like that. But then,
if there would have been something on screen with 5 minutes left or something, but I guess maybe that kind of tips it off.
Their sound editing is poor because even CM Punk's very first entrance was bad in regards to like hearing his music and stuff like that. And so like, it was bad with the ringing out. Cause I think they did it at 10, 5, and 1, I think. And then, but you couldn't hear it.
I never heard 10 and 5. In fact, I didn't even hear 1, but then on commentary, they said there were 45 seconds.
It was very muffled. You had to know it was there. And I was paying that much attention because I was like, are they really doing this? And then you could hear it. But yeah, Justin Roberts, they got to figure that out. That wasn't on Roberts, but yeah. So,
in this era, so we both agree 5-star match.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah. I'm shocked. And you're telling me this live as we're sitting here. So yeah, that's impressive.
Yeah. And you'll get it. You'll get the rematch on Full Gear, I'm sure. So,
yep.
You could give me that match for the next 6 months. I'd be fine. So the Click at this point were heavily involved. Right. And so the knock was, well, they were always in Vince's ear and they were always giving booking ideas and they were really influential. And some of the wrestlers say that, Jeff, my reaction is, yeah, why wouldn't you? I mean, if you work in any organization and the owner, you know, you have an opportunity to contribute your thoughts and ideas and have a great working relationship and make sure that you're politically keeping yourself visible in his eyes. Tell me what's wrong with that.
Yep.
Like these wrestlers are like, oh, the Click was always in Vince's office. Yeah. These guys lived the business. They drove together. They brainstormed on storylines. They went to Vince and pitched stuff. And guess what? He fucking listened because they were good ideas and it was better than the other shit they were doing on TV. And oh, by the way, all four of these guys, you know, plus Triple H, when he comes in, they're over, they're stars. So I just don't understand what the big deal is with, you know, having influence and power. And to me, every time I hear that, it's jealousy. It's jealousy that you either didn't have the ideas or the relationship or the conviction to go into Vince's office and have that relationship with him. But in any organization, of course, you're going to want to do that.
Yeah. And and it's been interesting because I know Bischoff has recently said on his podcast, Vince is at his best when he's fighting. And at this point, he's fighting. He may just be starting, but AEW, I know the Grand Slam week, WWE just barely beat them and the demographics and all this other stuff. But
Jeff, let me take exception to that because.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah. And go ahead.
Yep. Because do you actually think Vince cares? And what I mean by that is, you know, you've got 50 million a Saudi show. You've got hundreds of millions from USA and NBC, you know, by far the most profitable they've ever been. Stock price surging. Do you honestly think he cares? And I don't know the answer. Obviously, you don't either. And we can speculate. But I just, does it really matter? Because financially, they're killing it. Ratings? I don't know. Networks, maybe they're happy. Maybe they're not happy. But you know, there's only so much live programming out there. So I just don't I wish Vince cared. I wish his back was against the wall, but when it was against the wall in 96, 97, 98, here's the problem. He actually was fighting for his life. They were, you know, barely making money. They were, you know, unable to continue to pay Brett, blah, 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 all that stuff. His back was against the wall and he was fighting for his life. I just don't think he is right now. And I don't think he cares that Adam Cole left.
No, I actually agree with you on the superstars leaving. I think he is very not involved with some of those decisions too. Nick Khan might run it by him, but Nick Khan is making a lot of those calls as far as we can all tell.
And did they want to keep Daniel Bryan? I mean, to them, he was probably used goods past his prime, barely had anything left in the tank. They had already done everything they were going to do with him.
Yeah. Exactly.
And I'm not saying that's right, but that I just think that was the mindset.
And then he comes out and busts out a freaking 5-star match. And part of that is the Meltzer effect on AEW. You almost had to think no matter what, that was getting 5 stars, or at least, 4.5, something like that. This one too. So we've had a lot of action in this one. They've kind of cut off
a barn burner.
We've had Kid kind of stuck in the corner here. They're really manhandling Razor here. This is all I can think at this point is Razor's huge. And you got Michael, Diesel's really working him over hard. Michaels is drop kicking him and doing all kinds of quick pins and stuff like this against him. And so Razor doing the best he can. So, the hot tag's coming, pretty soon here for, 1, 2, 3, but they've done a good job of kind of cutting off the ring. And remember, this is just a random Sunday morning, who would have thought, they're going out here and they're starting to put on a, 15, 20 minute match, just working each other over.
So this was a Sunday. You're right. I wasn't sure if this was a Saturday or Sunday. So Action Zone was Sunday. Yeah. I'm guessing Livewire would have been Saturday during this era. But they had a Saturday show as well.
Probably. Yeah. And so along with everything else. Yeah. See, and I remember too much. Michael. So throwing his leg up as Razor went to go off the ropes. Ref didn't see it. Good move there. Interesting. Yeah.
Jeff, as I was doing my prep for this show, what I realized is the match we're covering at the end of the month was also right around this exact same time.
Ah, okay. Yep.
That's so right. Yeah. So it's just, it was interesting as I was looking at through that. I did a lot of reading of your boy Meltzer's old archives.
And?
That shit's hard to read.
Both of them are hard to read. The old stuff. Yeah. Not just him, but both of them are really hard to read.
Yeah. It's like a rambling run. Everything's like a rambling run on sentence. It's like someone just rambling on and talking and talking and using more words than they should to be able to say what they should say in fewer words. How annoying was what I just said, right? It just, but that's how it's written. They're all run-on sentences.
And I have to, and I always try and sit, tell, like when I read them, like sometimes I'm pulling from different areas because of like how it's laid out and stuff like that, because it's never clear. And sometimes like there isn't an actual star rating or like things, you know, you kind of have to dig for it a little bit where, you know, is saying it and things like that. And so, yeah, but I've noticed, and we use them both, you know, we enjoy using them both, but Meltzer at like long, like just long-winded paragraphs, and PW Torch has way more spelling errors. I don't know why like that. It's how much I'm on this. We're a second commercial break here now. Yeah, that is what I typically notice when I'm looking at both those. I'm with you though. Yeah, absolutely. So
yeah, that's the other thing too. You just didn't see matches this long on television.
Well, and that's something else. And so I, whether you noticed it or not, the part of the reason they said they did the match is first is because so they could build it around like not having to do a whole lot of commercials, the Omega and match. And so if you know, there was only one picture in picture commercial that whole first 30 minutes. And so like, and they were able to do it. So yeah, that's why it felt like a lot in the end, because it was, and I did start to lose interest in that show by the end, because it was like a poorly laid out WrestleMania or a poorly laid out WWE pay-per-view where it like the wind is just out of your sails, because that was such a good match to start with. That looked like a little bit of a botch there, kind of swinging around. Yep.
Dude, this is a
Razor trying to get some momentum though. Yep.
Place just going nuts. Both guys out. Razor and Sean both out. Both looking for the tag. Hey, so right around this era, and this, I don't know if we can even find this match, but it might be interesting. Jacques Rougeau's retirement match had 18.
I saw that too. Yep.
Yeah. 18,500 at the Montreal Forum. Him against Pierre Ouellette, his former partner, obviously. Apparently, and I don't know if it actually got a five-star match, but the write-up said it, you know, it was a five-star match of emotion. So I don't know if we could find it. That'd be an interesting one to
that
cover.
Yes, because when I was reading some of my stuff too, we'll have to, you know, incorporate that one as well too.
So Sean hits Diesel with the super kick inadvertently. And then this was, you're going to cover it, but this was the era where they were starting to tease that these two were going to break up, huh?
And hot. Yep. Coming in hot. One, two, so, man, looking at just how he's moving just so quick compared to everybody else.
Well, and you heard he recently said he's ready to return to the ring.
Yep. Yep. Well, and I mean,
that just feels like so made for the Royal Rumble, right? He comes out as the 1-2-3 kid. How cool would that be?
And you wonder how he could do it. I was going to ask you 1-2. Nope. Wait. Oh no, 2. Okay, close. There was a kind of a dirt sheet kind of thing floating around there that Michaels actually texted some of the wrestlers that left, saying like, "Go out and prove them wrong." What are your thoughts on that?
Well, a couple things. You know, I mean, I guess part of it is, hey, wow, is that just a 2 count? What a match.
Holy, that was interesting. That was a weird move too. I mean, cool move, but yeah, weird. Kind of throwing Mike or throwing Xbox a suplex back into Michaels. I
mean, look, at the end of the day, Sean.
Whoa. Hello.
2 count. He counted one with his left hand, one with his right hand.
They kind of countered in midair. That was incredible.
So
Sean, I mean, yeah,
look, at the end of the day, who is Shawn Michaels in WWE? He's like a middle manager.
Yeah. At this point,
you know,
yeah.
So he's telling the people that reported to him, hey, prove him wrong.
1-2-3. Nope.
No, it was only a 2 count
again. Ooh, oh my God. So many near falls.
Yeah. Yeah. This is wild. And Diesel still out cold from the super kick.
Still, yeah.
Wow. Jeez, what a match. It's a regional manager that's, you know, texting his employees saying, hey, prove them wrong. I don't know. I mean, yeah, I guess you're not being a company man, but what are you supposed to do? You have a relationship with these guys. Adam Cole, in part, is who he is because of Shawn Michaels. No difference in so many of those AEW or the NXT guys. So no problem with it at all. I'm sure it pisses him off. I'm sure he's sitting there saying this is bullshit. Now, I'll tell you what one of my big takeaways has been over the past, you know, year is, and I could be wrong, but I don't think I am, how little sway Triple H actually has.
Yeah.
I really don't think he's that important in the company. I mean, you know, look, obviously he is, he's part of the executive team, but how much influence does he have? I mean, who's doing all these big media deals? It's Nick Khan. Who's making every final decision on creative? It's Vince McMahon. Pritchard obviously has, I mean, he's director of creative, ton of control there. Dunn, he has his control. Where does Triple H fall in all of this?
Yep.
Putzing around in Orlando, running a developmental territory that they don't take seriously, that's lost a ton of its talent, that is basically starting from scratch.
Right.
So who is Triple H in this whole thing? And I don't even know how. I mean, Steph, you know, she's got her brand officer title, but it's like,
any philanthropic effort is going to have Stephanie attached to it. Yep.
Well, charity's the new marketing.
Yep. So her words, not ours.
Yeah, yep. Exactly. So again, I just can't believe, I mean, he really, and then there's the whole family dynamic. So at the end of the day, Jeff, you got a guy who has a good job at his father-in-law's company.
Thanksgiving just has to be a delight. Yeah.
I mean, and what's Triple H supposed to say? Hey, Vince, you're, you know, well, too bad, kid. You know, like it doesn't even, you know, I don't be surprised if at the end of all this, Shane ends up running the damn company.
Well, yeah, that you got to wonder, like there has, you would think, you would hope that there's some kind of succession plan, like, you know, whether something happens to Vince, they'll say, well, Vince is going to live to, you know, be 130. It's like, okay, well, he's not. And so I would hope that they have some kind of plan, not even just for us, but for the investors, you know, to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, leg drop off the top rope on Deshaun. That's it.
Was that it?
No. Jeez, another two count.
Man, that was close. Oh, and Diesel. Oh, but the big boot with Razor distracting, that's going to be it. Oh, that's unfortunate. Yep.
Wow. Now that was a tag team match.
That ref was terrible.
That might have been, that had to have been, and I don't know what information you have on this, that had to have been one of the best tag team matches in the 90s. It had to have been.
That's a good, we'll have to look and see what's going on there. Yep.
All right. So let's get into the aftermath.
Oh, it's time for the aftermath.
Initial thoughts.
It's nonstop. It was, and it wasn't slow. It wasn't rest holds. It wasn't technical. Like those guys were going at it for the whole time. Like that was,
that was a hell of a match.
Yep. I was a big fan of that one.
Loved it.
Hot stuff.
Again, that had to have been one of the best tag team matches of the 90s. I don't know how it wasn't.
Let's see if there were any I'm looking at 5-star rated matches in the 90s. Bret Hart, a tag match. I don't see any tag matches. It's all New Japan or All Japan or singles matches. Nothing in the 90s was a tag match. It was a 5-star tag match. I'm sure there's lists out there, but yeah. So, okay. So what played out here? So eventually
hold on, cagematch.net, top 10 tag team matches in WWE history.
Go.
You ready?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll go 10 through 1. Cause I think this is a cool topic. 10 Revival versus Gargano and Ciampa. At TakeOver Brooklyn 2. Benoit and Jericho versus Dudleys versus Hardys versus Christian and Edge. That was the ladder match on SmackDown. Undisputed Era versus Mustache Mountain, 920 episode of NXT.
That was good.
SummerSlam 2000 TLC match number 7. Number 6, Shield versus Team Hell No and Ryback at TLC 2012.
We'll have to add that one.
Wyatt versus Shield, that Elimination Chamber match 2014. Benoit and Jericho versus Austin and Triple H. That you have to add to the list. That's the one Triple H tore his quad in.
Yep.
3 is Benoit and Angle versus Edge and Mysterio at No Mercy 2002. Number two is DIY versus the Revival at NXT Toronto, which was ridiculously awesome. And then the best one ever, WrestleMania 17 ladder match, or maybe that was a TLC match, but either way. So, you know, but again, my question was 90s, and I'll dig around a little bit, but you know, all these matches were after the 90s. There just weren't a lot of great tag team matches in the 90s. I mean, even the 80s had some, but 90s weren't that many. So I'd certainly be curious. And I guarantee if there is a list, you're going to see Shawn Michaels a lot, because you're going to have this match. Plus you're going to have some of those great Rockers matches from the early 90s as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Good stuff though. That's a good list. We'll definitely be adding some of those to our list for the future here, because yeah, we're always adding matches. So what did this lead to? Survivor Series, you actually had the bad guys. It was 1-2-3 Kid, Davey Boy Smith, and the Head Shrinkers facing off against the Teamsters, Shawn Michaels, Diesel, Owen Hart, and Jim Neidhart. And then Jeff Jarrett as well too. And so, yeah, interesting though, like little take, but like, that's a really good team when you think about it, both of them. But yeah, so, Ramon actually, being the sole survivor of this match, he then on when, started feuding with Jeff Jarrett, that feud going into early 1995. Really 1-2-3 Kid though, was just a fan favorite for a long time here. You know, a lot of good matches, you know, with Bret Hart, just all kinds of different people.
We have to cover that Bret Hart match,
and we've got that one on our list. I know we do. That was for the World Heavyweight Championship. And one of the write-ups I said for at the time, so this was July, 1994, when that match time, it said, he wrestled Bret Hart in an unusually long quote for the time match, which it was 18 minutes. Like, and so, yeah, like, you know, it's just interesting how things are defined back then versus what we have now. And so, August 28th, then you have Michaels and Diesel, you know, capturing the tag team championships as well too. They beat the Head Shrinkers. And so, and then going on to Diesel, you know, losing the Intercontinental Championship to Ramon, you know, getting super kicked, like you said, that was, you know, triggering the split, between them as well too. You know, and kind of leading to all that and you know, drawn out until, or, you know, that happened at SummerSlam, and then going into Survivor Series as well too. And the feud just kind of, but then we know, Michaels winning the Royal Rumble in 1995, setting up the match for WrestleMania 11 against Diesel. So, good stuff. You know, everybody just kind of kept, you know, that was the storyline at the time. And so, and those guys were top dogs too. Sorry to say they weren't. So, while debuting this year, PWI 1-2-3 Kid number 22, Diesel was 14, Razor was 7, Sean was 5. So big numbers for these guys in 1994. The Observer Newsletter had this one. Highlight of the weekend was Action Zone on 10:30 with a tape match with Shawn Michaels and Diesel versus 1-2-3 Kid and Razor Ramon for 4.5 stars. I thought it was the best WWF television match in well over 1 year. Diesel was KO'd by a Michaels superkick, and the faces got one near fall after another on him before Diesel finally recovered as a Michaels ducked. Diesel put the big boot in Kid's face for the pin. It was very much like a hot Japanese match for psychology, and Michaels was out of this world. Actually, when that match aired, Kid was out with a knee injury. Should be back before you read this. And this came out, I think it was a week or two after this match actually aired. And Michaels was out with a broken hand, but neither could be acknowledged on television because of this match. An amazing match. And up until this point, one of the best tag team matches in WWF history. The crowd was jacked for the match, and all four men were able to keep up the frantic pace. You were not seeing action like this on a regular basis at the time. I did love the ending here and how the challengers looked strong in defeat, and really Kid eating the pin was the only way here to go, as Razor was the champion. The story of Sean and Diesel being able to remain a cohesive unit after SummerSlam was tested here, with Sean accidentally hitting Diesel with superkick again, but Diesel was able to recover, and boot Kid for the win. And so, I kind of mix those up in between, but yeah, that was, both Observer Newsletter and, the Torch. So, 4.5 stars though, is what they gave this one.
Let me give you one more list, which is the 10 greatest WWE tag team matches ever, according to Dave Meltzer. So these are based on his rankings. I'll tell you that this match that we're covering today is 10th all time.
Okay.
So according to Meltzer, this is the 10th you know, according to his ratings, this is the 10th best tag match in WWE history. And I'm just looking to see if anything else. I mean, so number nine was from 2019, number eight, 2012, seven, 2019, six, 2000, five, 2016.
It was nothing before this one.
Four, 2001, three, 2001, two was 2001. And then number one was that Mustache Mountain Undisputed Era. He gave that five stars. So as I speculated, according to Meltzer, and I see no reason to think otherwise, this was the best tag team match of the 90s. Mm-hmm. And may have been better than anything in the 80s as well. It was that good. You realize how many tag matches have occurred.
Oh yeah. And to think that, well, and did he have any others in the 90s? I heard you say 2000.
No, not in the top 10. No.
Okay. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. So, or the 80s for that matter. So you could argue that pre 2000, you could argue pre, you know, Hardy's, Christian and Edge, Dudley's, nothing that they had ever done from a tag standpoint touched this match.
Well, and this is one where I'm not surprised by that. And it's just so weird. Like, it happened on an Action Zone. It was a pre-tape. Like, in this day and age, like, we would have known what the results are by the time people left. Like, you know, and so just crazy to think that this was the, you know, the caliber of match we got. I think it speaks to why, you know, the click gets shit a lot of times. It speaks to what these guys were willing to do and go out there when they wanted to put in the work and they were working with people they wanted to, like, put on a hell of a match, like, plain and simple. So how about your score, Tom? What do we have there? We had 4.5, right, is what I said. And so for Meltzer, yep. And so, Where are you falling on this one? What are you thinking here?
I'm going to give this an 8.5.
Okay.
So the only two things that hurt this match are, there's three things. The build wasn't like off the charts, right? I mean, it was kind of a TV match that made sense because of storyline.
Yep.
The atmosphere was Action Zone, small building. I mean, this was not the ECW arena or a WrestleMania. Okay. So the atmosphere wasn't great. And then, the finish was okay. But again, for as great of a match as that was, I would have loved to have seen just something off the charts in terms of a finish. So I'm going to give this an 8.5 because I still did love it. And again, we're arguably talking about the best televised tag team match prior to 2000 that this company had ever done.
Ever.
Let's not lose track of that. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to give it an 8. I think you're dead on with your assessment of kind of how this played out and things like that. I almost feel like it was too early to get a good gauge on 1-2-3 Kid. While his rocket hadn't really taken off yet, in a lot of ways, this was just another stepping stone match to get to eventually, you know, Sean and Diesel. And so nothing wrong with that. It's just, let's call it what it is too. Like, you know, in essence, it was a house show that they went out and did, you know, someone in the back, you know, whether that someone told them in the back, like, go out and do whatever you want. And then this is what we got, or who knows? Like, you know, that could have been the case, but I think I see no reason to especially do any lower. I probably could fall to an 8.5 as well too. For kind of the same, you know, same reasons with you is kind of why I'm just giving it a little bit lower there, but I also, it was by no means a bad match. Like we've said before, we kind of look at everything and take everything into account, which is what we need to do. And so, with that, I think it's always good stuff. So yeah.
Awesome. Great match, great episode. I love this.
Tom, you know what else is great and something we haven't talked about today?
Let me take a guess. You are going to refer to the fact that your junk is clean and feeling incredible.
So not too long ago, I had my partner made up my year ago birthday dinner to me. And so she took me out. I know not to your favorite steakhouse where I live, but you know, a well-known famous steakhouse.
No. Where you went is my favorite. I just go to the other place because it's a little bit cheaper and easier to get into.
Fair. That, yeah, very much so. And so but we always have a good meal, whether no matter where it is. And so she treated me to a lovely steak dinner, the least I could do, like, you know, my small contribution, not small, you know, anyways. So my contribution to the evening was making sure that I was well-groomed from head to toe, all over, both with the weed whacker, both with the lawnmower, both with my trimming, like my shears kit, all that. I used everything that Manscaped had that morning, and I made sure I was ready to go for that evening and looking good for my girlfriend. And so I want to make sure that everybody else can do the same thing. And we know how, you know, we've said it before, you know how you can do it too. It's that new code, payoff20, 20% off, free shipping, everything on Manscaped's website. Just bundle it all together. It doesn't matter. Like, get signed up, get whatever you need. It is absolutely worth it. Like Tom and I have always said, we don't bullshit you and give you some BS. Like, we're reading off of the ad and stuff like that.
It's a shoot, brother.
It is absolutely a shoot. Like, they sent, you know, they give us our notes, but we're giving it to you straight. Like, Tom and I don't mess around. We use the product all the time. You've heard about us talking about it before. We should have opened the show with it. Next week, we're going to open the show with it. This week, we're going to close it. But you know what? Payoff 20, use that code at manscaped.com.
And that's it. We'll see you next week on an all new episode of The Payoff.